Oh, that's right. We're right back here for an extended Meet Me at the Diner. And today, Elizabeth Moffley is here. She is on the Charleston County School Board down there in Charleston. She's also a candidate for South Carolina State Superintendent of Education. And today is her 26th anniversary, and she chose to share it with us. How you doing, Elizabeth?
I am great. It's really nice to be here. My husband's sailing without me.
So. He's sailing without you?
Yes.
Okay. Well, how... Maybe you'll be able to be there after the 10th for a little excitement, huh? A little celebration.
Well, let's hope after the 10th I get to go to the 24th.
To the 24th, yes. I tell you what, I have never seen so many candidates running for superintendent of education.
Well, that's because I got in the race.
Is it that because? Okay. Well, Elizabeth, you did do this twice before. You are passionate about education. My God, you must be.
I am.
Yes.
I'm serious about wanting to change some policies. And all my candidates agree with my policies. They even agreed with them in 2010. Dr. Zase even adopted my policy and is still writing op-eds on it, but has done nothing to implement it. So there's still hope.
There's still hope.
That we can get some things changed.
Well, what is the cornerstone of your wanting to run and wanting to be superintendent of education on a policy?
Well, it really started when my daughter was in second grade, and she actually graduates tomorrow from high school. My last of four graduates. It's very exciting.
Absolutely. So, congratulations.
Well, thank you. So I saw a lot of things that were happening in the education establishment. For instance, the No Child Left Behind, teaching to the test. And no one was saying anything about it. And everybody thought that it was something that they could beat or, you know, that they were actually going to be able to accomplish the goal, which, you know, the end goal was that 100% of our students would be proficient in on grade level by 2014, hence why we got the waiver from the No Child Left Behind, which then, of course, the state board ushered in the Common Core.
You know, I have a real problem with, I know Common Core is not on the books for next year, okay? But I have a real problem that we spend all this money on Common Core, implementation of Common Core.
Well, I'm going to tell you, as the superintendent, that administration, they're part of their job is effective communication to all stakeholders, and no one informed the stakeholders what Common Core was. That's really kind of sad.
It is kind of sad.
And also, I think it's very important to point out that, you know, the state board does have this authority based on the General Assembly who gave them these powers, and they're appointed. And so when everyone was upset with their adoption, they had no reason to even reconsider because they're appointed to their positions and not elected, which is why the argument had to go to the General Assembly. And it was the House that finally was able to repeal and get us out of the smarter balance as well. We're over-testing students. That's something that I really got passionate about. And now we're wanting to change teacher evaluations and use student high-stakes standard tests towards a teacher evaluation, which I've completely disagreed with since I ran in 2006. And that's something that we've been trying to implement in Charleston County. Charleston County actually got more money, $24 million, than the state got to look at doing, changing the evaluation for teachers. And
well,
they
we're
are
always
not,
talking about up here how much money y'all get down there in that Charleston district down there. And there you go. And now you just told us you just got $24 million?
Federal money. The thing is I'm on that board. And we are the second largest district, so I really understand federal and state mandates and how we have to implement them and the limitations that we have at the local level based on what they're doing to us at the state level. But the idea, so it was $24 million from the federal government, but we have a policy that was very specific that says anytime the district applies for a grant, they have to include the board has to give approval, which they never did. They wrote this grant and said they were doing all these things to get this money without any board approval. It's pretty amazing, honestly.
How does this happen?
Unfortunately, a lot of school boards, I know they're not the most popular in most districts, mm-hmm. I know this sounds bad, but You do. You end up with special interests that are on the board. For one, I know in Charleston County, the relationship between Charleston County School District and the Chamber of Commerce, they're the ones that are running the referendums for school districts. Actually, Berkeley County got in a little trouble over theirs. They've had one indictment so far for a district employee campaigning using district resources. But it's really about having a board that will hold the administration accountable. And I brought this up to hold them accountable, and no one else wanted to do it. They didn't want to touch it.
Well, you know, I think we ought to tell people a little bit about your background. You're a business person.
Right. We have three businesses.
Three businesses. And what type of businesses are they?
We have a construction and real estate company. We own a farm, which is an equestrian farm. It's a facility that we lease to horse owners. And we also have a shrimp dock on Shim Creek.
Well, it sounds like everything should be real peachy except for the economy tanked. I guess that probably put a crimp in some of your stuff.
It did. We pretty much took a 2-year sabbatical.
Yeah.
And we traveled.
Yeah.
It was a nice opportunity. We got to go see. My husband loves traveling, and he's already got a trip planned for Europe this summer for 6 weeks, leaving on the 29th of June.
Will you be going with him, Elizabeth? I think that is a question I need to ask you.
That's funny. Yes, I'm going.
You're going?
Yes, okay. We're going to Germany. We're going to be doing a boat trip.
A river cruise or something?
Yeah, we've chartered a boat that our family will be on. It's a really nice way to get to see a countryside because you have your house.
Sure.
It's your car. It gets you around the
Sounds
country.
Marvelous.
I know. And then you have bikes if you want to get off the boat and explore.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I know that you also believe that there ought to be a difference between a technical school and a college situated student that's going on to college and one that is going to be going maybe, shall we say, to technical school.
That's true. This is something I promoted in 2010, that we need to have diploma options, because right now we have a one-size-fits-all high school diploma that is geared for everyone going to four-year college, and we're ranked 48th in our dropout rate nationally.
48th?
48th.
There's only two below us?
And so, obviously, that is not working. And, you know, graduation is so important to an economy, as we all well know. Because if businesses are wanting to move into South Carolina, they're judging the quality of our secondary education based on our graduation rate. And additionally, so by only offering one diploma, which is not applicable to all students, we need to offer, I think, a 2-year diploma, one for kids to be able to go to 2-year college. In addition to that, I also think we need to address our special needs students, that if they successfully complete their individual education plan, that they earn a diploma as well. I think it makes sense. Our diploma in South Carolina, by most state standards, we require more credit than any other state. So, for instance, which we've talked about this, I'm sure you remember, that you only need 19 credits to go to a 4-year college. You know, the Commission of Higher Education has mandated what those are for admission standards. But you have to have 24 credits to graduate from a high school. And by law, they're supposed to be aligned for a seamless transition from school, from secondary to higher education, and they're not. So I think that's something that's important because the idea behind it, I'll have to explain the idea why the General Assembly, which they make a lot of laws without going to the state board or to the Education Oversight Committee, they just randomly legislate, as we well know.
they do, you're right.
Was under the Education Economic Development Act. They added 5 additional elective credits, and the intention was that students could get outside credit for real-life learning so that you would be apprenticing and mentoring or even getting work credit. But it was an opportunity for public education to hire more teachers inside public school to teach these elective credits because they hadn't figured out how to give students credit for elective credit, which is something that we could do at the state level through the state board, is write a guideline for how to allow these credits. But by making it mandatory, 24 credits and all these electives that are being taught inside our schools, It's it's anywhere between $700 to $800 million.
So you're telling me we could actually cut some costs there?
Yes, we could, by allowing real life learning credits. So,
you know, we have the G. Frank Russell Center, which is a career center, right, mm-hmm. as part of the high school learning, and kids from all over the county go there for everything from baking to computer science to automobiles. I mean, they work on all things. They come home with lots of awards. That is a good program that gives them the opportunity. In fact, we have had interns working in our store mm-hmm. from the high school through that program, and gave them the opportunity to see, was this something that they wanted to look at or not?
Right. When we took vocation out of high schools, mm-hmm. it was when we were growing our two-year colleges, right. our technical colleges. And we were supposed to have, we have reciprocity with our two-year colleges. And I think they're great. Something that I would like to see us do is eliminate Carnegie Unit hours of seat time. I'm sure you're aware that you have to get 120 hours of seat time in order to get credit, even if you've mastered the subject. If you're not in that seat, you're not going to get the credit. We need to eliminate that and to allow some more flexibility and innovation, especially at the high school level, where you could have like a Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Tuesday, Thursday, more of a college schedule, so that our students could go to our two-year colleges and work on an industry standard certification. We also have implemented a lot of technical programs in Charleston County, and my objection to them is that they're really an introduction with no credit associated towards a certification in that field. So I think it's a waste of time unless you are actually getting credit for an industry standard certification.
Well, here in Greenwood, between Piedmont Tech and even between Lander, we have bridge programs. And the kids, we've had some kids who actually graduate from Piedmont Tech before they graduate from high school.
I know. My daughter, after ninth grade, she wanted to homeschool. And I said, fine. And so what we ended up doing is she went over to the technical college. Trident Tech is what we have in Charleston. And by the time she graduated, she had 30 college credit hours. So this is not something that's impossible.
Right, exactly. I mean, and it really cuts down. If they want to go to a four-year school, they can really bridge that very quickly going through technical.
There's something else we could do as well. I mean, I have this conversation with my board and our superintendent all the time that AP, has a high-stakes test at the end. And so if you don't get a 3, you don't get the credit. Whereas if you took a dual credit course, you pass it, you gain the credit. But the problem that we have, which I think we need to do something about with our two-year colleges, is they make you take a placement test, which is sort of like a high-stakes test going in order to be able to take the course. And I think if you've shown that you're capable of the work, I don't think a high-stakes test should be used to whether you should be admitted or not. But at the same time, under the No Child Left Behind, under their great idea that all teachers were highly qualified and certified through a high-stakes test, I really think that we need to, under the waiver, for one, to allow, because Teach for America actually got this waiver, and they're coming into schools, but they're degreed in the course that they are teaching. So I really think that, and by having degreed, like, social studies, science, math, English, mm-hmm. that you're degreed within that subject matter, that actually qualifies you to be a dual credit teacher. Mm-hmm. And so I think really by 10th grade, for a lot of students are capable of doing that work. If you really look at English 3 and 4, it's identical to English 101 and 102. So we have a lot of duplication. We're making our students take these courses in high school, and then their first year in college, they're repeating the same courses. So I really think that there's a lot of courses that we could align to be credit, college credit mm-hmm. for English 101 and 102 would be your English 3 and your English 4 instead of, it's just redundant.
You're for cutting out the redundancies. You're cutting out for streamlining and would I be fair to say you want them to be able to get through school and be able to either get out in the workforce or go on and get more training?
Exactly. That's what I would like to see. Okay. I mean, that's the intent. And, you know, we all get caught up in literacy. Of course, that's a big issue right now. It was a big issue when I got elected on Charleston County School Board. Our superintendent said that we needed to start teaching literacy, or otherwise it would be educational malpractice. And I'm like, what? I thought that's what we were supposed to be doing in the first place. But, you know, I think it also gets blown out of proportion that the majority of our students are successful. I would say 80% of our students. So when you're talking about the, you know, how bad our schools are, you're really just focusing on, I call it, you know, one bad apple spoils the whole bunch. You're looking at 20%. I mean, yes, yeah, in that 20%, you have students that have learning disabilities, special needs, and it's, you know, it's just the way it is. But it's not that we have, I really don't feel like we have bad education in South Carolina. I just feel like we have bad policies that make us look bad. The grading scale, I want to change that.
What would you go with?
I want to go with a 10-point scale. South Carolina has a 7-point scale, which they actually made it up.
They made it up. Come on now, Elizabeth.
They did. When we voted to allow the lottery
right
into the state, that is when the State Department of Education, the State Board of Education, they were directed by the legislature to come up with a uniform grading scale because every district was using something different. Mm-hmm. And why we didn't go with a 10-point scale, I can tell you why I think we didn't go with a 10-point scale. That is, by setting a higher standard, less kids qualify for lottery scholarship money. That's
bad, Elizabeth.
Well, I think so, too. I think it's unfair to our students. But also, our students are competing against other states to get into college, which
sure.
GPA is the bottom line for the most part. I mean, even Duke has done away with an SAT at high-stakes test because they don't find that it has any value of whether or not somebody's going to succeed or fail. So hopefully more of that will be taking place, especially in secondary education where we're overdoing it. But our students are competing with other students who have a 90 to 100 GPA or a grading scale.
Mm-hmm.
And ours are, so our students are not being... It's unfair, it's not competitive, and I think that's something that we need to look at.
Well, we're off and running here this afternoon
yes,
with Elizabeth Mopley, and of course she wants to be the next superintendent of schools. Elizabeth, why have you run for the third time? I mean, you are passionate about this, I know, but why do you persist?
Well, I think the bottom line is I'm an advocate for children. And I think learning should be fun. I know we've been on the campaign trail. We did the ETV debate, and one of my candidates told me, she goes, I'm sorry, Elizabeth, I can't look at you. You make me laugh. And I said, well, what's wrong? I mean, education should be fun. Why can't we have some fun? I mean, it should not be, you know, just test and measure, and to allow teachers the ability to be creative and innovative, which has been taken away from them. Common Core was even going to be worse. And, you know, revising the standards of learning is something that I've been calling for in 06, in 10, and most people had no idea what I was talking about. Their eyes would glass over. It's like, what are you talking about? But Common Core, you know, I think educated a lot of people of what standards were,
mm-hmm.
which is, you know, what we do every day in the classroom, we're expecting teachers to convey this information to those students, you know, based on their grade. But I've always felt that our standards, which Common Core started using this after I had already been using it, which was an inch deep and a mile wide, that we needed to restore quality from the quantity of standards that we were wanting students to cover in a year. And it had repercussions as well because teachers could not cover the material, and they were sending it home for parents under homework.
And the parents were lost, too.
Well, it's true. I mean, especially the new math, nobody knew how to do it. I mean, it's like, well, where's the book? Where's the explanation?
The answer? Exactly.
I mean, I had teachers who also, you know, there's children would go to a different school than where they were teaching, and it would be beyond them. They're like, we don't even know what this is, and I'm a teacher.
Yeah. That's pretty bad. You know, one of the other things that I wanted to cover is what do you feel about Florida's system of being able to read by the time you're in the third grade or you're there you need to learn to read by the time you're in the third grade, and you don't just move on if you don't know how to read in the third grade.
Well, I don't agree with that.
You don't agree with it?
No, I have four children, and I read to them all the time. I had a library of children's books, and they all struggled with reading. And so this idea that, you know, they don't have any books in the house, so they don't know how to read, so we need to get them in school earlier for early childhood. I'm not a fan of early childhood either, but...
She's a rebel here today. She's a rebel candidate.
My daughter, when she started kindergarten, she was five, but she was six months younger than a lot of, because she had a late birthday, May.
Okay,
so
right.
She was a younger kindergarten.
Younger 5-year-old.
Yeah, younger 5-year-old. And so she was struggling to keep up, and she hated school at five. I mean, she would cry. And I kept her in until Christmas. And then they were like, we're just going to retain her. And I said, well, if that's the case, I'm taking her out. And I'll take her back to the preschool that she was in, because this is stressing her out. And so by the time I placed her back in kindergarten the next year, she was now older. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, she really struggled with reading. It was just something that did not come easy for her. And by second grade, I actually took her out of the public school system and put her into a Trident Academy, which was for, you know, students who struggle, just because I needed her to build up some confidence because of the pressure that was being placed on children to be performing or, you know, reading. And so they were wanting to retain her again when I came back. And I'm like, wait a minute. Now she's going to be 2 years older than her peers. And so
how is she doing today?
She took her senior year at our high school, which is now the largest high school in the state. Wando High School is now the largest. She only had one course that she needed to complete for graduation, and she placed into English 101, completed it, got an 81, by the way, which is a B at the 2-year college, Trident Tech, but it's a C on her transcript.
Wow. Listen, we're here with Elizabeth Moffley. We're going to join South Carolina News in Progress. Stay tuned. The story will get more interesting. I guarantee it.
Gold. Gold. More precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here, Sharp Facets Gallery. My last interview for the day. I started out this morning on the I Love Ann show at 11 o'clock. We had Congressman Clyburn here on his new book, Blessed Experiences. And then 4 o'clock, we talked to Don Jordan, and now we're here at 5 o'clock with Elizabeth Moffley. Elizabeth, how do you really feel about the education system here in South Carolina? And is it something that truly can be changed? Because I know it's one thing to be irritated about it, and it's another thing to be able to actually affect change.
That's true. I mean, I think most people need to understand that the state superintendent is more or less a figurehead, that you can encourage policy changes through the State Board of Education in conjunction with the Education Oversight Committee, which actually should be repealed. I would like to see that group eliminated. They were only to be in existence for 1 year. In 1998, they're still there.
They're still there?
They're still there. But it really is. It's about collaboration and moving policies forward that are positive with the State Board of Education, the Education Oversight Committee, and also the superintendent does get a seat at the table on the Commission of Higher Education and also our technical board, so that you can affect policy from these, you know, you have a voice at the table, and I think that's very important, and I think that whoever's the next state superintendent needs to have ideas of what are our problems and what are the solutions to solve them.
And if you had to enumerate down to three problems that you see, how many do you have?
I got three.
Three.
I can do that for you.
Okay, let's do it.
It's student achievement.
Yes.
Instructional quality and graduation rate.
And student achievement. Let's start with there. Where student achievement. How do you feel about the fact that we just move them through? And you were telling me something about the Department of Juvenile Justice and how many students they found had problems.
Yes, it's unfortunate. You know, I think students need resources at the time they need them. We don't wait till the end of the year and say, oh, you're not, you need help, so we're going to retain you because we ignored it all year. I think that's not the right way. That's not the solution. I think we need to help our students when we see that they have problems. And, for instance, the Department of Juvenile Justice, they had incarcerated 20,000 adolescents. And out of that 20,000, they discovered that 18,000 of those were there for nonviolent offenses of disrupting the learning environment, and they had undiagnosed mental and learning disabilities, mental illness and learning disabilities that had not been diagnosed, where that should have been diagnosed at the school level, which would have prevented them being incarcerated for nonviolent offenses.
Sure. Well, how do we address those issues?
Well, I really think that we need more guidance counselors to, and also we need to make sure our teachers are trained to be able to, if they see an issue with a student, that they immediately address it. We've quit doing parent-teacher conferences. You know, let's call the parent in and say, you know, we've got an issue with the student, and get to the bottom of it. What is the issue? Is it just a single incident, or is there something that we... Maybe you have dyslexia and we don't know it. Maybe you have poor vision. Maybe you have bad hearing and we don't know, which therefore you're not learning. Mm-hmm. And what is, you know, what is causing the issue? But I really think we need more guidance counselors, especially at high school. If I'm the state superintendent, what I would like to do from the State Department of Education is I would like to put all the different opportunities for, you know, what you can be when you grow up,
right?
Like the state superintendent. What are the pathways to get there? You know, what do I need to do if I want, maybe I want to be an underwater basket weaver? I'm just kidding.
But I think one of the problems, Elizabeth, is that our kids are making up our minds before they even get to high school on what career path they're going to. Don't you think we're shortchanging them in some aspects?
No, I mean, I think they have interests that they would like to maybe consider. I know that when my son was in eighth grade, he thought he might like to be, I don't know, an attorney, and they decided that maybe he should be a security guard.
So, what is he today, Elizabeth?
He's a surfer.
He's a surfer. Surfer dude. Okay, well, good for him. All right. He's got it made then, doesn't he?
He's looking for a sponsor.
He's looking for a sponsor.
Aren't we all? Oh,
yes, exactly. But in all seriousness, more guidance counselors would do what for our high school students?
Well, it would help them know what opportunities. So if we had diploma options, that you know if you went to the two-year college, what you would be looking at, you know, what are the opportunities? How much money are you going to make at the end of it? Because I know that most students, that's what they want to know. Tell me what it is I need to know, and tell me why I need to know it. And then I also want to know, if I do this, how much money am I going to make? I mean, that's, sure. I think we all want to know that.
Sure.
And I really think that we need to educate our students more on, instead of you just have to be at school for a certain number of days, that actually there's a goal and there's lots of things that you can be. Sounds like you're going to join the Navy.
Be all you can be, right? There you go. All right. Well, that's one part of it. And then the teacher part. You know, I was a little astounded when you told me that we have new teachers coming out that you told me this off the air now, that that aren't literacy able to teach literacy.
Correct. We have our new teachers that we're hiring in Charleston County, and they're coming from all, you know, all of our universities. They're not properly prepared to teach in our public schools. We have to retrain them. And the biggest issue that we have, and if we're going to talk about literacy and that you should be able to be on grade level by third grade, unless of course you have a learning disability, if they're not, who's responsible? Are we going to blame the parents? Because most of us send our children to school to learn, and that's where we say the highly qualified educators are. And if our children are not reading in third grade, I'd have to say who had them in first and second.
And kindergarten, too.
Yes.
Yes.
So I really think it's very important that we I would like to see under the waiver for the No Child Left Behind. It's a temporary waiver. We get to rewrite it in a year, thankfully. We could include a lot of these things because when I told you student achievement, instructional quality, and graduation, those are the three things the waiver wanted to know what we as a state were going to do. And so, I mean, why wouldn't you not have diploma options for students? Because it's about increasing graduation rate, but at the same time, one size doesn't fit all, and each student has different interests. I mean, if we colleges only offered one diploma, how many universities do you think we would have?
One.
How many degrees do they make up a year?
Yeah, well, exactly.
I mean, they do, if you go and look, but at the same time, you know, the national student debt is $1.7 trillion for students coming out of four-year college, and they don't have a job. And I find that most students that go to a four-year college, they never end up in doing what it is they're degreed in anyway. It's always something else. It's you need to be an entrepreneur or you're working for a corporation or you're a banker.
Sure. So what are you saying about four-year colleges?
I'm saying that we need to rethink. I think if you're going to be an attorney, you know, medical, there's certain... I don't know that you really need to go to a four-year college for $200,000 to get a degree in entrepreneurship.
No, I think spending a lot of time working in a business is one of the best ways to learn it from my perspective. I don't know about you, but
no,
I think
it is.
The apprentice program, I find it interesting that for years and years and years in Europe, they have had the apprentice program. It didn't matter whether you wanted to be a dental hygienist or whatever. You had to spend time working in that job in order to get your final diploma, as we call it, or degree. And yet now we're bringing back the idea of apprentice right here in the United States.
Well, I think it's an excellent, you know, we're in the trades and construction. And I'm going to tell you, tradespeople, they make good money.
Yeah, they do.
And they have a skill. And I like the saying that if you teach a man a skill or a woman, they're liable to practice it.
Absolutely. We're here with Elizabeth Moffley. She wants to be the next superintendent of education. When we come back, we're going to be talking about a few more issues here. So stay right with us. Hey, if you do have a question for fiery Elizabeth Moffley, give us a call, 229-7984. That's 229-7984.
McDonald's presents Confessions of an Ex-Hipster.
I loved cappuccinos, so I put on an itchy turtleneck and grew a goatee. But before I knew it, I was into French films, indie rock, and not bathing. Luckily, I got help from McDonald's McCafe cappuccinos. Now I'm watching football, wearing khakis, even high-fiving again. Thank you, McDonald's.
New McCafe mochas, lattes, and cappuccinos from McDonald's. With fresh ground espresso and real steamed milk, it's all the coffee, hold the attitude. At participating McDonald's.
Visit your local McDonald's in Greenwood and Abbeville today.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here, Sharp Facets Gallery. It is 5:48 in the evening. Elizabeth is celebrating her 26th anniversary here with us this evening. How nice. And your husband is out on a sailboat. What's wrong with this picture? I think you must really, really, really want to be the superintendent
of
education.
Know, what they say, three times is a charm. I'm not going to say what the other one is.
Okay, all right.
And I'm lucky number 7 on the ballot.
Number 7 on the ballot.
Mm-hmm. Those are lining up. Stars are lining up.
They are. So, Elizabeth, you know, you and I were just talking that how did you get involved in education to begin with?
Well, I'm actually very passionate about our children, all children, not just my own, but yours and everyone else's.
Yeah.
That, you know, I think if you do things that are right by children, then it works for everyone else. And, I mean, I understand how through human growth and development, children evolve and what they're capable and not capable of, and that, you know, some have special needs and some don't. But I've always been involved teaching soccer as youth soccer at recreation departments. Even as my children were growing up, I was a coach for Mount Pleasant Recreation. But when my children were young, I really got concerned about child abuse and neglect in the state. And so I went and got myself certified as a governor-appointed guardian ad litem for child abuse and neglect. And that's a very serious job, because what you're doing is you're going in, you're court-appointed, you have access to any and all records on these families.
Mm-hmm.
And as a volunteer, you're not paid, you go to some really bad cases to investigate what has happened with that child, or what has happened, obviously, DS, DSS, you know, the conditions that are going on there. But that's I worked sure. with through DSS, and actually judges really took to heart what you as a guardian had to say about the recommendations for that child and that family, because they know you had gone in and you're not paid to do it.
Right.
You're doing it because of your commitment. And it's just something that I've always maintained. Having four children, four children's a lot of children.
Yeah, it is.
So,
and all different.
And I'm also a grandmother.
Oh, okay. She's moving right up the ranks here. Well, Elizabeth, since you've been on the school board down there in Charleston, what have there been some things you've been able to affect in Charleston?
School choice. And boy, changing anything at the district level, they'll fight you tooth and nail. It's kind of funny being elected board members with an appointed superintendent, which is different than the state. You know,
sure.
the superintendent's elected and the board is appointed. I really think the board needs to be elected, but that's just another matter.
Right.
But I know that parents want their children, you know, I think that parents should decide where their children go to school, not the government.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was the chair of the policy committee. And boy, were they nervous when I was on that chair.
So what did you accomplish?
I was able to open up that parents who wanted their children, anywhere they wanted their children to attend in the district that they could. The only limitation, really, was if space was not available. So if you have a school that, like Wando, that is overcrowded, that, you know,
you can't send another child
yeah.
there. Right. Now, what do you feel? Should the dollars follow the child?
Well, you know, there is a law, and I think I would like to see it, and actually it's called Grants for Students Attending Private Schools. I'm trying to remember the number. I think it's 59-10-40 or 59-40-10, something like that, and it's on the books. And Arizona did rule the Supreme Court that, because the issue comes back to the Constitution and that the state cannot give money to religious institutions, and not all private schools are religious, by the
That's
way.
True.
But by giving it to the parent to make that choice for their parent, for the student, then the state, you know, is hands-free.
Right.
And so I would really like to see us make that law effective.
Well, you think about the fact, though, a lot of people, several that are running for office seem to think that if we gave parents and school and gave school choice where the dollars follow the child, that the public schools would suffer.
Well, I don't think so.
Okay.
I'm all about free market competition. A lot of parents are going to send their children to the school in their community regardless. Just because it's convenient. I've always told that to a rural community at home. I said, if I lived here, even if my school was, I know, unfairly labeled,
mm-hmm.
Failing just because of the way that system is set up, I said, I'm just a creature of convenience. My child would be going to that school because they'd be able to ride their bike to it.
Sure. So you don't feel that that is a problem. You feel that the dollars should follow the child, and whether it's homeschooling or whether it's online or private or public school.
Well, you know, out of all the candidates that are running,
mm-hmm.
I'm the only candidate who has homeschooled, done religious school, Catholic, Baptist. I've done charter schools.
You're an experimental
Montessori
person.
schools.
Yes.
Traditional public schools. So I think it's kind of funny when I listen to my candidates say that they're for all these things, when in fact I've actually done them all with my children. Something that's interesting that maybe not everyone knows is I actually was instrumental in getting the Office of School Choice at the State Department of Education, because that was my idea that got implemented in 2007. Of course, they've since changed the name to the Office of Transformation. I don't know why everybody thinks that's a great name. Transformation. You know, we got Transform South Carolina. It's, I feel like everybody's a robot.
Right.
But
we may be someday.
But the reason I wanted to have that office created was to allow, because I was having an issue as a parent at the district level getting some educational alternatives that I wanted my child to be able to have access to credit for. They didn't know how to credit it. And so my end goal with the Office of School Choice, which is still there,
yes,
was to be able to approve alternative educational programs. For one, I had sent one of my sons on an Outward Bound program in, where was it? Costa Rica.
Okay.
And, you know, they had great educational component. We all know that traveling is very educational, but they were like, well, since we didn't write the curriculum and we don't know how to approve it. And so I was wanting to see, you know, alternative educational opportunities pre-approved at the State Department level so that local districts didn't have to figure it out. That was my end goal. Still hadn't happened. But
still hasn't happened.
I've been working a long time on getting small changes.
You have been working a long time for small changes. So as you look forward to this election on Tuesday, what are you all about, Elizabeth Moffley? Go ahead and take 2 minutes and tell us what you're all about and why people should vote for you.
Well, I'd hoped I'd gotten that message across in the last 48 minutes.
But I'll give you these 2 minutes to make it succinct and tight.
Okay. Basically, I have run 3 times, and I originally got involved because of the No Child Left Behind in 2006, and I am very passionate about our students and what's best in their best interest, and I think we teach to the test, and I think we need to stop that. And we have some great opportunities right now, especially for the state superintendent, to be able to rewrite the standards, which is something that I've been campaigning on in 2006, 2010, and 2014. And now we have the opportunity to do it because the General Assembly has repealed the Common Core and assigned the revision of the standards to the state superintendent for approval by the State Board of Education, the Education Oversight Committee, and if we bring any outside standards by the General Assembly. And so it's something that I've been campaigning on. How many years is that? To have the opportunity to make sure that we have quality instruction versus quantity instruction and rewriting the standards. It's like something I've been asking for years. And I just think it's a great opportunity. I know that I was speaking in Pickens and the diploma options and changing the grading scale and the revision of the standards are all things that are supported by the General Assembly and everyone that I know in there. They said, yep, we need that, and I have no objections. The diploma options, you know, that one size fits all, we need to do something, we need to offer opportunities for our students, not close opportunities by making them dropouts, by giving them certificates of completion to allow them to go either to a four-year college, if that's their choosing, or to go to a two-year technical college for an industry standard certification, which that's where all the jobs are growing in that industry. And also to ensure that we address our special needs students, that, you know, if they are successful, that they also earn a diploma based on their individual education plan. And I think it's a great idea. I know it was adopted in 2010 by Dr. Zase. He's still writing op-eds about it. He just wrote one in the Greenville News on May 25th that college is not for everybody, but, you know, unfortunately, he never implemented it. And so for me to be able to implement some of these policies that I've been asking to do as the next state superintendent, because I feel like I do have ideas, I do bring solutions, and I think they're acceptable. I know that my other candidates agree with me. So they might as well just vote for me, Elizabeth Moffley.
Okay. Elizabeth, do you have a website?
I do. It's ElizabethMoffley.com.
Okay. And here you are at a time in your life where all your kids are grown and you could just be sitting back and traveling, and yet you want this job.
Well, you know, I had all my children in South Carolina. I'm originally from West Virginia. My husband's from Philadelphia. But all my children were born here, and more than likely they will raise their family here. And this is about our next generation, and I want to ensure that we have the best.
All right. Well, you heard it right here on WCRS. Elizabeth Moffley, thanks so much for making the drive up here and not being out on the boat with your husband and spending your anniversary here with me, Elizabeth.
He gave me flowers. It's all good.
It's all good. Well, this is WCRS right here in Greenwood. Bye-bye, everybody.